Five centuries ago, in taverns and public houses across Europe, the masses would gather for discussion and debate over the latest ideas sweeping the land. From one such meeting place, a small Cambridge inn called the White Horse, the Reformation came to the English-speaking world. Carrying on the tradition, welcome to the White Horse Inn.
Welcome to the White Horse Inn. Gentlemen, Easter is rapidly approaching, and we're talking about why the resurrection was necessary. Now, during Easter week, Holy Week or Passion Week, our focus on Good Friday is upon the crucifixion of Christ, and then on Easter Sunday, the focus is upon the resurrection of Christ. And how do we relate these two events to each other? How is the crucifixion related to the resurrection?
Well, part of the answer surely is in the opening to St. Paul's epistle to the Romans. He identifies himself, calls himself an apostle set apart for the gospel of Christ, which he promised beforehand through his prophets in the Holy Scriptures, concerning his son, who was born of the seed of David according to the flesh, who was declared with power to be the Son of God by his resurrection from the dead, selected out as Son of God, and that's connected with what happened at the cross, and does it count?
So we not only have there in Romans chapter 1 the prophecy of the Old Testament pointing forward toward Christ in his Davidic office, we also have his human nature.
Right on.
We also have his divine nature.
Yep.
But we have what both our traditions, the Lutheran and the Reformed tradition, have historically spoken of his humiliation and his exaltation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's the point of Christ's humiliation? And how does that
first of all, what it isn't. Christ's humiliation is not a lesson for us to be more humble.
Yeah.
Well, really.
Yeah.
A lot of that is preached badly out of Philippians 2.
Mm.
First of all, it's not that. It is, the old theologians said, the extent of his descent to identify with us for our sakes, he would do this and go that low. Now, that really is in Philippians 2.
And that's why he was the son of David according to the flesh.
Right.
Yeah, he became like us.
Yes.
There's an ancient heresy called Apollinarianism, and people don't need to remember that, but it's basically that the relationship between Christ's deity and his humanity is that his humanity is like a vehicle. It's like your car. You get in your car and you drive it. His deity was behind the wheel. That is a heresy, but it's a subtle one that I find all around us today. This talk about the full humanity of Christ is essential because it was as the second Adam that Jesus Christ saved us. It was not as God. It wasn't because he was God that he saved us. He was and remains God and man in one person, two natures. However, what we often do here is say, he saves us because he's God. It's all the God things that he does that save us. It's important for us to see here that his humiliation was essential because, as Athanasius said, only God can save us, but only man must.
It is, or whatever he did not assume.
He did not redeem.
He did not redeem.
And so he became flesh because it was humanity that had to fulfill the law. And this second Adam does it in our person. Very important to say. He at no point does his divinity save him from his humiliation.
The writer of Hebrews says it's for this reason that he didn't take on the form of angels, because that's not who he came to save, but he became like us and was tempted in all points, even as we are, yet without sin.
Right. Looking at his humiliation, that passage, we also have his exaltation. And his exaltation, of course, is his resurrection with power. How do those two fit together, his humiliation and his exaltation?
Well, just as he represented us in his humiliation and becoming like us, he also represents us in that he was received. That's why Paul, in his resurrection, that's why Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 speaks of him as being the first fruit of the resurrection. And so we have the assurance of our being received and accepted by the Father because he has received Christ for us.
To piggyback on that, Paul says that he was vindicated by the Spirit in his resurrection. Well, they should use the word there that is used elsewhere for our justification. It's justification. He was justified by the Spirit. Now, what on earth does that mean? Well, again, Jesus Christ was the second Adam. He was the head of our new humanity. And he was justified by works. He had accomplished everything that God had given him to do. He was the only man in history who was ever justified by works. He actually did it.
Right.
And now we are justified in him, not by our works, but by his. That is one of the things that the resurrection accomplishes. It is the justification of Christ. It is pointing to this man, granted, the God-man, but pointing to this man and saying, this person here who was tempted in all points as we are, yet without sin, has triumphed over death, Satan, the world, the flesh. He has triumphed over everything. I have brought him out of death, the last enemy, and everyone who is in him is going to experience the same future.
Yeah, in this sort of postmodern relativistic world, if somebody says, why the cross and not some other plan? One of the answers is because God raised him from the dead, vindicating his person and his work. Mm-hmm.
And will raise us from the dead.
And our resurrection is just as certain.
And therefore, we can't just go from incarnation to resurrection and then just sort of touch on death. Why then did he die?
Right. That's
because
a great
the
point.
Wages of sin is death. And just as he took on our form for us, he also died to pay the penalty that we owed, and his resurrection validates that death as well as that life.
Well, the whole language of first fruits there is important because it doesn't mean the first in a series of sequential events. It means the first of a whole group, an entire group. So it's like the first grain that comes, the first grain that comes
out
of the harvest.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the natural understanding of it. And it's the first fruits, ekhnokron.
Out of the dead.
Right. It isn't just in general, but out of the dead and prefigures, as a harvest does, is prefigured by the first grain, so it prefigures what will be done for us.
Yeah, we separate Christ's resurrection from ours too much.
Mm-hmm.
Think of, again, the way Paul does it here, as you've said. The first fruits of the harvest is not a separate harvest. It's the first fruits of the harvest.
Of the harvest.
And the head is not different from the rest of the body or disconnected from the rest of the body. If you want to know what this glorified body, the church, looks like, don't look at its present form under the cross and under suffering and under death. Look at its living head, Jesus Christ, at the Father's right hand.
Right.
It can't be otherwise for us.
Well, I think that's one of the problems we have being so far removed from these agricultural metaphors that are used in the New Testament, because an agrarian society would have fully understood that when the wheat starts to come in, you see the first head, you know, ripen, and then you know that the rest of the crop was going to be just like that. And so it is when we look at Christ's resurrection, we see how he was raised from the dead in a glorified human body. So too, the rest of those are right behind as part of his resurrection.
Yeah, the farmer doesn't have to go through and test every piece of fruit to see if it's going to be okay. He receives the first fruit, and therefore he makes a determination on the whole harvest.
And is this different from your typical Christian Science funeral that we get in a lot of our own churches, where you deny death.
Let's celebrate.
Yeah, in a lot of evangelical churches, it's actually called a celebration now. And, you know, what we're looking forward to, we confess it in the Apostles' Creed. We don't confess, and I look forward to dying and the separation of my soul from my body. I look forward to the resurrection of the dead and the life everlasting. That's the Christian hope. The resurrection flies in the face against any, on one hand, denigration of death, and on the other hand, any lack of enthusiasm for the resurrection of the body. Our salvation is not a salvation from the world and from matter and from creation. It is the salvation of us with the world and with creation, as Paul in Romans 8 makes so clear.
Absolutely.
When you look at the nature of Christ's resurrection, you have a bodily resurrection. It's physical. Jesus appears to the disciples, eats fish, and so on. What does that tell us about God's work? The old categories, and creator and redeemer and consummator, how does that all fit together? What does the fact that it's a bodily resurrection tell us about all of this?
Well, it tells us that the human body is not innately sinful. I mean, that there is a value to the human body. We've talked before in other programs about the sort of Gnostic tendency that hovers above most Christians in thinking that there is something inherently wrong with the body, that as if our bodies are our enemies. And so therefore, death, as Mike just said, sets us free in that it separates us from the body. Well, Christ not only redeemed us before the Father, but he also redeemed the human body. And so the resurrection that we're looking for is an actual physical bodily resurrection.
Right on.
And therefore, as John says, it does not yet appear what we shall be, but as he is,
right,
so we shall be also.
Yeah, I think it's important that we realize that we have tendencies to this. We have tendencies mm-hmm. yeah. toward that Gnosticism, every mm-hmm. one of us. And if we don't have them, the 20th mm-hmm. century will give them to us.
Yeah, I mean, we have headaches. We have
right.
cancer that we can't cure.
Right. Right. And that the Christian message is not a spiritual message in that sense at all.
It's pretty earthy. Yeah. It's pretty physical.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too. You asked the question along those lines about the relation between the Creator and the Redeemer in all of this. It's fascinating that in Genesis 1, you have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit active in creation. You have the Son as the Word, and then in John, the prologue of John's Gospel, a recapitulation of that, that now this Word who spoke the whole creation into existence has come into his own world that he had made and became subject to that post-fall phenomenon that he has come to redeem us from. And then, remarkably, there at the end of the story, so you have at the beginning, the middle, and the end, in Revelation, you have the crucified and risen and ascended Lord standing there and saying, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. What he's saying is, he's announcing, I am the Creator and the Consummator. I am the one who not only redeems individual souls from hell, I am the one who makes all things new. I am the same one who created all things in the beginning. I have upheld it ever since. I redeemed it, and now I have brought it with me into the everlasting Sabbath rest.
Yeah, that's why that great statement in John 1, and the Word became flesh
yeah. mm-hmm.
and dwelt among us.
Yeah, I think we can even go so far as to say that if you're at a church where the flesh of Christ doesn't play much part, you might consider another church. Mm.
Absolutely.
Well, part of the problem that I think we run into here is that so many evangelicals were up against Protestant liberalism for so long, where people were denying the deity of Christ, denying the virgin birth and so on. So it used to be that you defended the deity of Christ over yes. against those who denied it. But we've gone way too far yeah. the other way.
Yeah. We're like the early church where the problem
right.
is that he had flesh.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah
right.
exactly.
There was a famous novel several years ago of writer Shirley Nelson that talked about her experience at a Christian college, and it was obviously, if it was in Chicago and you could read through the lines and figure out which college it was. And her crisis of faith came when she was sick and looked up in the bathroom, and in the wall of the bathroom was a picture of Solomon's head of Christ. And she was, you know, dying of illness and right. looks up and thinks, did Jesus go to the bathroom? And it was right. a real crisis of faith for her
right.
to deal with this. And I think we've so sanitized, we've Gnosticized Jesus.
Didn't you guys grow up with Solomon's
oh,
head?
Oh, yeah, we did.
I did.
We did. But mm-hmm. it's very hard to think of Jesus eating and going to the bathroom and being tired and sleeping and doing all those things that humans really do. Mm-hmm. We have a problem with that because we're so used to reacting to the denial of his deity.
Mm-hmm. We even say, for instance, well, I know he was in all points tempted as we are. We quote Hebrews, we believe it. But when it actually comes to, for instance, the last temptation of Christ, remember when that movie came out?
Yeah.
Of course it was blasphemous. Of
sure.
course it had all kinds of... But one of the things that I thought was fascinating about that was it evoked such profound anger from Christians, and the way that it was expressed was not really toward the blasphemy as much as the humanity of his temptations. But you get up pretty close to taking issue with his full humanity, with some of the criticism that was made of that movie.
Well, I think that's why people tended to react the way in which they did. They were so used to defending the deity
yeah.
That,
yeah.
that they really struggle with the humanity of Christ. We're, I think in this program, we've talked many, many times about the importance of preaching the cross and the necessity of a cross-centered proclamation, a cross-centered liturgy and so on. Where does the resurrection fit in there? Do we preach about the resurrection? I mean, are we called as Christians to talk and preach and proclaim the resurrection? How does that fit in?
Yeah, it's vital because our reality is that we're living under the shadow of the cross. You know, our living head has gone into glory. So we are promised glory in the future because our living head is already experiencing that glory. But we are Christ in his humiliation right now. The church and we as individual Christians suffer with temptation. We struggle with the world, the flesh, and the devil the way Jesus did when he was on the earth in his humiliation. The church is experiencing that humiliation now that Jesus experienced in his earthly mission. We aren't yet experiencing the glorification that Jesus Christ, our living head, is experiencing. However, we have, unlike Jesus in his humiliation, experienced, because of his resurrection, the inbreaking of his kingdom by his Spirit through word and sacrament to such an extent that we can say the resurrection has dawned. Paul puts it in terms of, especially in 1 Corinthians 15, the inner man being renewed in anticipation of the whole person.
Mm-hmm.
The way he puts it helped make sense for me of my dad's tremendous struggle for a year before he died. I didn't grow up with my dad taking any real great initiative in our family devotions, and he didn't really express his faith very much. He's one of those guys who was kind of quiet about his faith. When he was on his deathbed and his torment was excruciating, we would walk into his room and he couldn't even communicate except by lifting his fingers. And as I would read the scriptures to him or others would, he would point up to Christ. And when we would finish reading, he would make a motion for us to continue reading. This was all absolutely spontaneous on his part, but out of character for him, knowing the way he was growing up. I think that, now, you don't want to make this paradigmatic for every case, but what Paul says about the inner man being renewed as the outer man is decaying, I saw there, my dad was decaying outwardly mm-hmm. at breakneck mm-hmm. speed, and about at the same speed was being renewed in his yeah. inner man. Now, that, again, isn't to say that the inner man is all that matters. It is to say, as Paul says there, each in its own order. First, the inner man is regenerated, then the outer man is regenerated. Just as Christ was raised from the dead physically, we know we will be raised physically on the last day. But our senses tell us that can't be because look at my body, how it's deteriorating now. But the inner man is being renewed day by day. You cannot, as the faith healers and all the prosperity gospel people say, you cannot look on the outward state of things and make any judgment about the kingdom of Christ, because right now it's an inward thing, but it will take place outwardly on the last day.
That's an especially great point, given the fact that there are four middle-aged men in this room who are outwardly decaying
yes.
as we speak.
Yes.
And it's just great that we have that promise that even as we decay, that Christ's glorious triumph over death ultimately will be ours.
But also, listen, when we talk about the victorious Christian life being victorious over sin, the only victorious Christian life is the life of Christ. And so it is a reminder, even as we struggle with sin, outwardly, yes, we are perishing, but inwardly, we also struggle with sin. Mm-hmm. And what gives us comfort and consolation is not that I'm more victorious today right. than I was right. yesterday, but that when Jesus offered up his life, he offered up a life that was perfectly obedient to the law of God, and therefore he is the one who is victorious over sin.
Mm. Mike, you've made the point on a number of broadcasts that it's important to prepare for the crises in life before they come, because once the crisis comes, you're probably in the midst of the war and not able to do a whole lot of preparation. And so isn't it really important that we emphasize the nature of Christ's resurrection in our teaching and preaching before death comes, before suffering comes, so that in that hour people have the categories in place and they know where to go to look for help and they know what this means?
Yeah, and we can't assume that people do know this. We're at the place again, I think, where we have to just assume that the culture pretty much is in the driving seat in the lives of our people, and that they don't, when we throw around terms like crucified for our sins and raised for our justification and the resurrection this, the resurrection that, we just assume that people know what we're talking about, and they don't. I think we have to go back to ground zero on a lot of this, and that's okay. Let's not talk down to our people as if they're stupid, but we do have to, I think, go back over territory that we cannot assume people have because they've grown up in the church. People can grow up in evangelical churches today, dare I say, people can grow up in Reformed churches today, and not be able to answer in any intelligible way what happened on the third day.
Especially if they have been catechized repetitively by the culture, which is intrinsically Gnostic.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's important to undo that by the consistent preaching of the resurrection.
Yeah, it's Lewis's line, C.S. Lewis's line again. You know, that we're to get used to matter. God likes matter. He invented it. And it's just central to the Christian proclamation.
Yeah, the vision of salvation being dying, going to heaven, and being disembodied fat little babies bouncing on clouds playing harps. I hated piano lessons. I can't imagine that being heaven. You know, no wonder people don't want to go to heaven.
Right.
It's so inconsistent with the joys and pleasures that we have here on earth. God wouldn't create us as human beings, taking delight in the things he had made, and then turn us into substantially different creatures for all of eternity. We are going to be human beings who, as Jesus after his resurrection, ate fish. We're going to be people who eat fish on the last day.
The White Horse Inn is a listener-supported broadcast. For more information about supporting our efforts, give us a call at 1-800-890-7556. That's 1-800-890-7556. You can also visit us online at whitehorseinn.org. That's whitehorseinn.org.